This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome. Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio at the 2025 ASTA Conference. All kinds of training, more training classes than you would possibly ever need or want. Bring your people, if it's not this year, next year. There's so many great conferences that sometimes we just don't think about how important they are. I interviewed a couple of great educators today, and they say, Carm, they've got the same people in the class all the time, every time. And they all get together and they say, yeah, I saw Bobby and Joe. They were here last year, but we're not seeing many new faces. But I'm here with Dutch Silverstein, and we're going to get back as soon as we thank our great sponsors.
Hey, take your NAPA Auto Care Center to the next level with the NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. Increase car count, build trust with customers, and stand out as one of the best. Talk to your local NAPA representative today. Hey, did you know that NAPA Trax has on-site training plus 6 days a week support? It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find NAPA Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com.
Dutch, how are you, buddy?
Peachy.
Dutch, you got your AAM from the association, didn't you?
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, many years ago. Yep.
All right, cool. A&M Automotive?
A&M Auto Service.
Yep. Auto Service in Pineville, North Carolina. That is no longer your business.
Yep, I sold out.
You sold out. 26 years?
26 years, yep.
Wow. And of course, I've interviewed you in the past. I think the whole world knows you were a pilot. And every time I read an article from you, you write so well for Ratchet and Wrench. When I get on a plane and I talk about the lack of processes and systems in a business, and I think about if anyone would think about the airline industry and what it takes to get up and get down and stay and maintain that airplane, why wouldn't we doing processes and systems to make minute one and minute 100 experience for the client packed with great processes and systems, because that's the only way airplanes work.
It's exactly right. You think about it, on average, there's 10,000 flights a day. Wow. Think about how many of those flights wind up actually having an issue. And I'm not talking about one where it's 10 minutes late or any of that, or even the mechanical that actually crashes or anything, loss of life. It doesn't happen. Could you take 10,000 driving segments? You're driving in your car with the same record? No, it wouldn't happen. I mean, there's a reason it's deliberate, this system redundancies, training for proficiency, all of the things that make it head and shoulders above anything else.
We got a vehicle that people depend on that they could get killed in if it's not working right or they're driving wrong. And I'm not sure we stop to think about the power we have in the safety side of everything.
I think people take it for granted, you know, and part of that is the good engineering that comes out of the manufacturers. Let's give credit where credit is due. There is some really good engineering. It's not all encompassing, but there is some good basic engineering that comes out of these vehicles. All right. And they're very tolerant of any carelessness, incapacity, or neglect. And that's a bad thing because people become at that point very lazy. And it's
routine-ish.
It becomes very routine. Instead of torquing wheels down,
there you go.
They just hammer them. It's three ugga duggas.
I know. And a real good policy in any shop would be check. I mean, somebody yells out check, and the guy in the next bay or the assigned checker comes in and goes all the way around and checks them all.
Yeah, doing true QC. Just the airline, you had a checklist somebody had to sign off on each step, each operation had to get checked off. I mean, there was system redundancy that was there.
And why wouldn't we on lug nuts?
Because why should I bother? They've been doing it since, you know, I'd started in 73, right? And nobody, how many times is a wheel off that you've ever seen? Nobody, it's, that's it, blah, 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 I'm done. Because I'm getting paid flat rate. I got to get this car out of here. And if I set the torque wrench up and tighten them down, lower the car, re-tighten them, then I have to tell the people, come back in 50 miles so I can recheck it again. But I'm not getting paid for that recheck. That's why it don't happen.
Look, you're writing for Ratchet and Wrench every month. Go to the back fold, the back page, right? Back page. You've written some really incredible articles. And if you invest the time to read what Dutch is writing, agree with him or not, they're very profound. They've got strong messages And sometimes you do, and I'm not saying political, but you've got a particular stance on a lot of the issues. I think it helps us stretch our thinking. Sometimes we get way too focused on stuff. Some of the articles of just recent, and I want to mention them because I want to pick his brain on a few of these. It's time to revisit licensing, the flat rate paradox, the illusion of transparency, which is really cool. Labor rates, the other side of the coin. You also did five ways to keep healthy finances and recognizing our customers' agency. Damn. And I didn't know where you were going with that till the second paragraph where you described what agency was.
Yeah, that's the reason, because you know, it's one of the words people hear, but nobody says, what is he talking about? What does he mean by agency? You know, because that's a word that if you look up in the dictionary and online, it shows that the usage is very, very low into the last few years. And then it's become, you're seeing it on television, you're hearing it on the radio, you know, or in podcasts. And people are saying, okay, what is he talking about? I'm hearing the word. So I thought it necessary to include the definition of what agency was.
And so I read it, a fundamental principle of interpersonal relationships and ethical behavior. It acknowledges and honors the inherent right of individuals to make decisions about their own lives, bodies, and experiences.
Yeah.
We're kind of in charge of that when they come in, giving them, we need to explain to them why and let them decide.
The whole point is for me, and this separates what we did at our shop and what I believe that relationship-based shops, how we differ from based transactional shops, is I don't employ salesmen in my shop. I employ advocates.
Right.
And an advocate says, let's sit down and talk about what it is that you want for your car. Right. Tell me about what your plans
yeah,
are.
Yeah.
And based on that, we're going to devise solutions for problems that you have and ways that we can help you meet your vehicle goals. Now, some people say, well, Dutch, what you're doing is you're engaging in consultative selling. I'm not selling anything as I see it. Yes, I could see how that would readily fit into their description.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no pressure in any of my shop at any time from any individual to sell anything because we didn't have a commission structure. So there was no inherent conflict of interest. There was no arbitrary whiteboard with a sales figure on daily sales figure that said, today we have to earn this much. And there was no competition that saying Joe turned this many hours and Steve turned this many hours, fostering the competition and no bonuses, no spiffs, none of that crap. I didn't have it.
You know, you said consultative selling, which is the exact opposite of transactional. And it really is relationship selling. I mean, the person came to you because they had a great relationship and they want you. People love to be sold. And I think we love to convince people to come our way. But I still love the idea of relationship selling instead of consultative. Neil Rockman wrote a book years and years ago on this. I'm going to guess 27 years ago. And in our company, we got it. We all read it. And we brought it to our salespeople because we just needed them to kick it up another level and really care about what they're doing with and for their clients. You wrote an article about time to revisit licensing.
Can I just say one thing?
Oh,
is it okay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You can't.
Okay.
Absolutely, you can't.
All right. So the point that I'm going to disagree with you on this.
All right.
People love to buy. Uh-huh. They don't like to be sold.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You're right. I take that back. Thank you. We love to buy.
People love to buy.
We love right? to buy.
There's an endorphin rush that comes with it. It's a lot right. of things, but people you're don't right. like to feel that they've been sold.
And you know what? I will stand corrected because every time I would ever have to go buy a car, I couldn't stand being sold it.
Yeah.
It's just my decision. Go see the finance guy. No, no, you're going to have to put handcuffs on me and put me in a two-wheeled cart. And you're going to have to push me in there. And I says, and then my wife is going to go get duct tape for my mouth because I'm not going to say anything. I hated to be sold from the financing guy.
Yeah, F and I. Yep.
Carb, you don't understand. I said, no, I understand. You're going to try to take my payment up another $300 a month. No. Okay. So there's the definition of being sold.
Yeah.
Very good. Licensing.
Yeah.
Golly, you bring up a great point in the article about Canada, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a licensed tech. Well, how long ago was that? Well, 25 years. Because you do it once in Canada and you're done.
Yes.
And you almost kind of the same in Michigan. You know, God bless the Michigan laws, but it hasn't been looked at in, I think, 45, 48 years.
It's really window dressing. It's an it's like security in an airport. It's the illusion of security. This is the illusion of competency and the illusion of someone caring. It's not legitimate. All right. There's no testing for proficiency that exists.
Stop. That's it. Episode over. Man, I'll tell you, the proficiency thing is, I think, the biggest part. If we can get proficiency testing going, certifiable, real legit stuff, we don't need licensing. We just need the consumer to look for that certification assessment and owners to hire people that do that. ASC was started for all this reason, because no one wanted the government involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The government's not involved. We're in chaos. As Tracy talks to her friends all the time about our industry, and the consumer's clueless.
Absolutely.
She asks friends, do you think the people who work on your car have to be licensed? She's never gotten a no. Yes, they all believe. And then she asks them the question, do you know that we have technicians working in our shops? No, they're mechanics. And that's my big push of changing that language in the industry. So when we talk about licensing, where do you think it will ever go?
It has to start with a public relations campaign. I mean, we have to push this as hard as we've ever pushed for change in any industry. It's absolutely necessary, because you have to create the demand. You have to be able to show the features and benefits, in using our terminology, of having your car serviced by a qualified professional to do them. Somebody has to look and say, that's what I want. I have a choice. That's what I want. And then at this point, now is a great time, because guys that are my age are dying and we're leaving the field, which leaves it, since there's going to be fewer, there's 174,000 repair shops, not including auto body or dealerships. And that number is continuing. That's the latest figure as of March 2024, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 174,000, right? Again, not including body shops and dealers.
Is it including the franchise base?
Yes. Okay. It includes the franchise base. And that number is diminishing.
Sure.
Because more and more guys are leaving the field. So now, with them leaving the field, this now leaves a golden opportunity for techs who want to start their own business, and for making changes, because there's fewer people that need to be affected. Yeah.
Get on the caravan, right?
Yeah. So you don't have to test as many, because there aren't as many.
That's right.
You don't have to worry about, you know, how are we going to fit this in the schedule? We don't have the auditors necessary to do this. It's something you have to consider, but there are less of them, right? Less people that needed to be audited or monitored for proficiency.
Right.
It has to start somewhere.
Do you think our industry wants this?
No. Absolutely not. Scared to death of it. Absolutely.
Who could control it? What are the parameters? It sounds like it could be a 15-year project to try to make it happen.
You know, realistically, I don't think you're wrong. It's not going to happen overnight. Anything related to change is not going to happen overnight.
And who, if you keep the government out, then who does it? And will this quote-unquote licensing agency have any clout or meaning with the people? Or will, and again, I love ASC. I think they're a great organization. We have to learn from what happened in not making an ASC certification have meaning to the public. And it's almost like, should ASC be doing this stuff? I would love to be in a think tank with a bunch of people, you know, four or five different groups in different rooms, whiteboard, post-it notes, and you come together with your top five best ideas. And I would love to see what something like that, a flow chart or responsibility chart, or I'd love to see what it shapes up to be, because there's a million different ideas, good, bad, ugly. But wouldn't it be neat to get it with one objective? Let's figure out licensing and what it means and how it works and how we make it stick.
That would be great. But, you know, right now there's a better chance that I could become Pope and my rabbi isn't going to go for it.
I know that.
Because ultimately, the problem is too many people in our industry only care about themselves. Someone far wiser than I said, we each navigate by the star of enlightened self-interest. Our vision is limited at times to inches in front of our nose. And if we can't see the immediate effects of it, we don't want to do it.
Right.
So you have to wait for a new generation to come in with whose value system is a little different. And the generation of people that are coming up now, they can wrap their arms around that type, because they are more cohesive in their vision. They're more than just money motivated. They like social causes.
Are you a NAPA Auto Care Center ready to elevate your shop? Then it's time to step into the premier tier NAPA Auto Care Gold Certified Program. Gold Certified Centers are recognized as the best of the best, delivering a consistent, trusted customer experience nationwide. Now, that consistency means more repeat business, more referrals, and more opportunities to grow your car count. Now, when you're Gold Certified, you unlock advanced resources, maximizing technology, boosting your local marketing presence, and keeping your team fully trained on the latest trends and tools. In short, Gold Certified status separates you from the rest. So what does it take to be Gold? To qualify, your shop must be a NAPA Auto Care Center for at least 1 year, have been open for 2 years or more, employ an ASE Master Technician or hold ASE Blue Seal status, co-brand with the Pro Image Program, maintain a 4-star rating or higher on Google, Yelp, or NAPA CSI, use digital vehicle inspections, offer NAPA consumer financing, purchase $7,500 or more in NAPA parts monthly, and participate in a NAPA business development group. It's a true partnership, and in return, NAPA rewards gold-certified shops with premium benefits like free priority placement on the NAPAonline.com locator, annual marketing funds, enhanced warranties, rebates, training opportunities, and a whole lot more. Are you ready to take your shop to the gold level? Well, contact your local NAPA sales representative today to see if you qualify and start your journey to gold certified. Increase car count, build trust with customers, and stand out as one of the best. Talk to your local NAPA representative today. Hey, let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NAPA Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. Now, it all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. And having local representation is a huge plus. Customizing Trax to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, a representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. Trax always has the flexibility to do business how you need to do it, which means it can also grow as your business grows. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business. Yes, a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at NAPATRAX, that's NAPATRACS.com.
The flat rate paradox, you talked about Gen Z. I thought it was very astute.
Yep. There's a reason for why they thought that the American dream for them is beyond their reach, no longer applies to them.
Oh my God. I read that about the American dream. See, I grew up, I don't know how, if we're close in age, but you're a boomer, right?
Yeah, of course I'm a boomer. Yeah.
We grew up with,
No, really, that's it. I'm in my 20s. I just look like crap. Yeah.
All right. I was flattering. Okay. I love to do that to people. Oh, you really think? Oh, okay.
I'm older than dirt. You look up dirt in the dictionary, and here's my picture.
We were told that the American dream is out there for you if you want it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And today, again, you got to buy a house. You got to have a family. Okay. You know, 1.5 cars, 1 to 2.5 children. Today, no, this applies. No one's teaching it. No one's emulating it. No one's doing it.
This generation, more than any I've all seen, you know, and at this point, despair is their constant companion.
Wow.
They lament that their parents are going to live the life that they will never be able to live. Right. And the single largest demographic with money in the country is us boomers. We maintain over 70% of the wealth. And they lament the fact that they're never going to be able to achieve that which we achieved. But in that, they are wrong. But because they're so discouraged, so disillusioned, so disheartened at the way things now exist, they won't even try. The effort that they're willing to commit is really minuscule. They've just surrendered to defeatism. That really bothers me. You know, I mean, it's good for my daughter because she's a hustler. She will go out. She's a worker. She was raised with my work ethic. So she goes out and she works. at this point, she's 30 years old. She owns her own home, right? This is what she's been able to achieve, the American dream that I achieved in that regard.
Anna. Met her yesterday.
My Anna from A&M. A&M is Anna and Max. And yep, 30 years old and she owns me, has since she was born.
Well, so does my daughter. And she's sitting to my left.
Yeah. Yep.
There was a point in time where she was working for me and now I'm working for her.
Yes. Yep.
And every day gets worse.
If Anna had indicated to me, if she said, Dad, I want the business, I would have just given her the business and said, have at it. I'll be here to help you in any way I can and make sure your rent payment's on time.
But she wasn't interested. All right.
She's into finance and she works for one of the larger banks in the area,
okay,
in the commercial real estate division.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Interesting. So this whole Gen Z thing, it just takes some time or a turned around economy or more job opportunities. But the thing that scares the crap out of me is everyone's talking about this AI thing and how many jobs it's going to replace. And again, I don't know if it's going to affect us to the nth degree unless we let it.
You have to choose, but up to 25% of all, right now, the latest statistics that I read, or up to 25% of the information that you receive online by using ChatGPT or any of the others is wrong.
Yeah.
It's flat out wrong. So the fact is, the base that's using that for that information doesn't maintain critical thinking because it's not taught.
I'm afraid of the verbatim use of it without applying logic, common sense, direction, strategy. Is this me? I mean, you ask something and it's coming back at you and you're trying to take ownership of that information you bought. Wow, I never thought of it like that. Well, maybe you shouldn't, and you should ask maybe another AI platform or rephrase the question.
You remember when we were coming up as a kid in the 60s, right? Question authority.
You think I'm that old?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
What, do you want me to lie? No, you're 29. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. You guys got to go listen to the episode with Dutch and Carm. They throw these 29 numbers out.
Right? Question authority. You remember that?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
So question authority. Don't trust anyone over 30.
Right.
Remember?
Yeah. But,
okay. Now go online to an impersonal machine and it gives information and, oh, it's 100% correct.
Right.
What happened to don't question? That's interesting as hell. Let me see if I can cross-reference that. Well, nobody wants to do the homework because we're intellectually lazy.
Well, wait. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about stuff that I feel, that I believe, that I would do if asked. And maybe we're arguing philosophy. We're arguing opinions.
The facts don't care about your opinions. Ooh, I'm so mean. Did you notice
that? No. it is an extremely profound statement.
Facts don't care about your opinion.
Yeah. No. Unless I can prove that my opinion is factual.
Yeah. So facts don't care about your feelings. Now, if you have an opinion, what is your opinion based on? Just because you have an opinion doesn't mean that I have to value it at all.
I may have read five different important facts, and I've interpreted them into an opinion.
Yeah, the wrong conclusion.
According to Dutch, not according to me.
Yeah, but I'm right and you're wrong.
Oh, I've always known that. First time I met you, don't ever try to tell me something.
I am listening to you. I've heard your position. I'm familiar with your position. You were wrong the first time I heard it, and now you're wrong again. But I'm not biased or anything. I'm not opinionated.
Is that why people on social media pick fights with you?
I don't think they realize what they're doing is that I enjoy that as sport. That really, for me, I love to argue.
I always knew that.
Yeah. You know, there's some people that don't know. Let's talk about it. Let's present this in information so that we can learn from it. You know,
that's 25 not, paragraphs later.
Yeah, no, I don't do that. There are people that avoid confrontation. Born and raised in the Bronx. I don't avoid it. I welcome it.
Please, when we're all done, let me tell you my Bronx story.
Yeah.
It's 2 weeks old, and I have to share it with you. Arthur Avenue.
Arthur, oh, Italian food. Oh, Arthur Avenue. Oh, my God, the bread. Oh, my God.
The ravioli, the sausage.
Sausage, yeah.
Oh,
you're making me homesick.
All right. What's a good Jewish boy like you hanging out in on Arthur
Avenue? Because, all right, I'm going to tell you the truth. Yeah, I don't know about it. But growing up in New York, all right, get all the different groups that were around, the Irish, the Jews, the Italians, the Jamaicans, sure, the Polish, all of it. The two groups that were most similar were the Italians and the Jews.
Yeah.
All right? Because, number one, Jewish grandmothers and Italian grandmothers were both 5 feet tall. And they were about 3.5 feet wide. And when you got in front of them in the house, it was on the Amma Mangiare, let's eat. And it was food and food.
Always.
And Jewish grandmothers, fresh, 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 always feeding, always
right,
feeding.
Right, right,
right. Okay. So when the husband died, because the husband would die before the wife, the grandmother would wear black. And you couldn't tell looking at it unless one had a crucifix if that was a Jewish woman or that was Italian.
Exactly right.
An Italian father and a Jewish father were never ashamed to kiss their sons in public. You didn't see the Irish do that. You didn't see the Jamaicans do that.
No.
So the similarities between the two groups that were family focused, faith focused. Oh, yeah. I grew up with Italians.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. We went to school together. My best friend was Paul Menena. I've known him now for 60 something years. I mean, almost more than that now. So this is just the way it is. So when I tell you that I grew up with Italians, oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? I would love to go to Arthur Avenue.
Oh, wait a minute. I just hit a button. That's great. Oh, my God. I won't tell the story on air, but after we're done, I have to tell you the story. Or should I tell it on air? Huh? All right.
Yeah.
So, G. Trulia.
Right. Garrick
Trulia. Yeah. G. Trulia. He comes over the house to spend the weekend with his, he brought his camper up just 2 weekends ago.
Jerry. Yeah. Okay.
Jerry Trulia. Yeah. And great friends of ours. And G says, we've been talking about this for about a year. He makes gravy. He doesn't make sauce. He makes gravy. Right. Yeah. And he makes all these meats. He makes the brujol and all this stuff. And we say, when are we going to have your gravy? He says, I'm going to have to come up and cook at your house. So he does. It's up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We just showed him the feast that G made. But before he got on Wednesday, he goes to Arthur Avenue and he buys everything. He's going to put in the sauce and the brujol. He brings the sausage. He brings the fresh ravioli. And the, the cavatelli, he brings it all up. He's got it all in his refrigerators and ice box in his trailer. And he gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday and he starts making gravy and the meatballs. And we had this feast. We drank so much wine. So you mentioned Arthur Avenue. G says, there ain't no other place to go.
No, he's right.
No other place to go.
He's absolutely right.
And
it's
sorry.
Like, I want to go down to a friend of mine asked me, he says, I'm going down to New York. Where should I go to eat? Right? You know, one of the places I recommended. I said, now, do you want to go tourist? You want to go not tourist? What are you willing to go to Queens? Where do you want to go? Is there Chinese food that you want? Italian? What do you want? And he told me. I'm like, okay. So now we're going to talk about Jewish delis. I'm going to talk about Wohop for Chinese.
Okay.
And we're going to wind up talking about. Now, there was a restaurant that's no longer in business. I wish it was still around just so that he could see it after 70-something years. They finally had to close, but yeah. Now, I was thinking that maybe you were going to tell me you guys went to the Feast of San Gennaro.
Are you talking about the feast? Is it in Bronx or is it in New York?
It's in New York.
We were there. We went there because we went with G to see ELO at Madison Square, and he took us through Little Italy there. And there was this big feast going on, all the lights over. Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. There's like, 10,000 people there.
They shut the street down.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, yeah.
All the food is...
That's right. You're right, Tracy. Wow. San Gennaro?
Feast of San Gennaro.
San Gennaro. Okay.
That's the way I learned to pronounce when it's coming up. I could be murdering the language.
No, that's all right. Jews and the Italians. You know what's in common with them?
Food.
The Mediterranean.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything about it was... There was no appreciable difference except for, like I said, grandparents, the family values, everything was the same. Mrs. Minetta, when Paul and I.
Story time.
She used to call us Pete and Repeat.
Pete.
Okay, because we were together. All right. So if Paul misbehaved, he got a crack with a wooden spoon. I got a crack with a wooden spoon, too, because I was with him, and I must have had something to do with it. There was no separation, All right. And yet my mother, there was an expression in Yiddish, a pachim tochas getting cup. which means a shot in the fanny goes straight to the head. And that was the same thing that was shared in the,
Wooden spoons. And the Italians had a saying about getting the bastone. And the bastone was the long rolling pin that they would, you know, flour out the dough.
The dough.
And the bastone. I'm going to hit you with the bastone. Anyway, what a wild little turn here. I know. Yeah, we have to go to a banquet tonight. We're going to have a guest speaker named Jim Knight. I've met Jim Knight. I've read his book. I've heard him speak, and I'm interviewing him. It'll be great. Let's talk about labor rates a little bit.
Okay.
There's so much going on. I mean, I think there's a lot of progressive shops that are really changing how they're paying their people. There's guarantees, there's salary plus, there's all kinds of bonus programs. I do know that there's one thing for sure that you have to be very careful with the wage tax law on how you're doing this stuff. I think you really need to sit down with at least a good CPA, figure out how you apply bonuses to time and overtime. It's not easy today, but you got to be careful of that. You think in the independent world, flat rates going away?
I think that its use is certainly diminishing because in order to be a really good flat rate tech, you have to be money motivated. That has to be your driver. You have to want to achieve a certain level of financial independence and you want to be money motivated. With the younger techs that are coming in, they want work-life balance. They're not necessarily money motivated. And they want time off. They want to be able to know that they have set hours. They look for a certain degree of security that they have. Some of them, a large percentage, certainly more than we'd like to admit, look at the prospect of work itself begrudgingly. They would rather be on the net and become an influencer or pursue stuff that's going to get rich quick. You know, they want to become famous so that they can afford the lifestyle that they want to have without putting in the work because they don't understand what the larger picture is. Slow and steady wins the race the overwhelming majority of the time. There was a fellow from England who came over and he bet $138,000 many years ago in Vegas on roulette and he won. Okay. Now we know that we can say, if you want to make money, you can go to Vegas. But all the lights, the glitter, the glamour and all of Vegas was all built by losers. So if you really wanted to win, yes, you could go to Vegas. You could do the influencer deal. You could try to go that route. You might, like in Vegas, you might win by spinning that wheel. But I guarantee you, if you do the work over the long haul, if you budget, live right, you'll succeed.
Yeah.
The odds or the likelihood of you're going to succeed or reach the outcome you desire are far greater. Then you become, it's like, you know, watching a kid who's talented play basketball. What are the odds that he's actually going to wind up in the NBA? Not great.
No, not great. Thank you so much. We talked about labor rates a little bit earlier, but I want to talk about labor rates. There's a lot of coaches that'll go out and say, listen, one of the most important things we're going to do first and number one is to raise your labor rate. There's so many other things to look at. Now, if the labor rate for the marketplace is low, there's room for improvement there. There's so many other areas of, you know, the gross profit on parts and, of course, cost control. You started to do some coaching, haven't you?
As a member of the Auto Shop Owners Group,
yeah,
we do mentoring, free mentoring.
Ah, that's right.
So it's a two-phase. I'm not a member of their mentoring. They have a group led by Adam Rath, wonderful human being, where they wind up doing that. I do it separately on my own, in my own schedule, without about one-on-one. Right. We have, as a matter of fact, members that are here at this that ASOC paid for. So here you have owners not making a lot of money, but who desperately need this training. So the Auto Shop Owners Group makes it so that their expenses are covered.
Nice.
Sometimes not completely, but the majority of which are covered in order to get here so that they can thrive and grow their business.
I would love to find out, and I probably know the answer. So what did you think of ASTA 2025? It probably helped move their life.
Yeah, no. It does you good. You know, I work with these people one-on-one to help them. And when you bring them in and they can see the larger community and see that they are not struggling alone, that there are others that are in the same circumstance that they are, it takes some of the pressure off. Hey, I'm not by myself. I'm not so bad that I'm the only person that's like this. That is really, really powerful stuff. To know that you're not by yourself.
When you talk to some people in the industry and you say, you know, Have you looked at labor rates in your marketplace? What is your labor rate? Would you ever recommend that they make moves?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I did it all the time.
Yeah.
The two popular methods for determining your labor rate, one I coined that I use for this, and the other, the great automotive writer, Mitch Snyder.
Oh, God, yes, I know Mitch.
Right? Called the Oreo method. The Oreo method is you look up the street to your left, that guy charges, we're going to say, $120 an hour. The guy to your right charges $130. So what are you going to charge? You're right in the middle at $125. That's the Oreo method.
Right.
The other method that I had is what we used to have on the airline, which is called TLAR, for that looks about right. When you fly back from California at night, you'd pick a heading, know the winds, and you'd request TLAR direct. So that at that point, you're going to fly the distance from Los Angeles to Charlotte based on a heading, and you're cross-referencing your position based on the glow of the cities. It says you can go. Instead of having moving from Nav A to Nav A or interpreting a route, remember, this was a while ago. It's called TLAR.
The glow of the cities.
Glow of the city
lights.
That's
too cool.
We used to turn the cockpit lights down.
Yeah.
On a clear night, right, when the moon was out, and we'd cross-reference because you were given TLAR direct, and you were flying, coming back early in the morning, right? You left Los Angeles, West Coast time, and you're flying the red eye.
Yeah. What were you flying, 707?
No, at that time, it was 737-200.
Really?
Yeah, and the 737-300, TLAR direct. So you could enter in on the 300. You could enter in on the FMC, the route that you wanted to. But, you know, it was just Quest TLAR direct because the traffic at night at that hour was reduced by so much. So TLAR, that stood about right. You just picked a compass heading.
You're putting a compass heading and the plane is flying automatically?
No, I'm taking it and it's flying according to the path that I set up based on that heading. Correct.
You never really take the controls on?
No. Sometimes you hand fly it the whole time.
Really?
Yeah.
It has to be a thrill.
Not really. It's a good way to maintain proficiency.
All right.
Because when I transitioned to Airbus flying, see, there's two different philosophies. There's the Boeing philosophy and the Airbus philosophy. The Boeing philosophy is the pilot flies the airplane and the automation is there in order to reduce workload. The Airbus philosophy is the autopilot is there to fly the airplane and the pilot is there just to maintain that the inputs are correct.
What's the difference?
Well, the one is that pilot flies and the automation is there to assist.
Support.
So support. The other is the airplane is there and the systems are going to fly the airplane. You just got to make sure that it does what it's supposed to.
But with the Boeing, you could become Airbus strategy.
You either love the Airbus or you hate the Airbus. I hate the Airbus. It's not a bad airplane. It's just no Boeing. If it ain't a Boeing, I ain't a going.
Damn.
Yeah, I did. For pilots, love. It's like Ford Chevy, right?
Yes.
You have guys that love Chevys no matter what. Guys love Fords. Guys like me who love piloting Boeing airplanes.
Got it.
And then there are guys that love the Airbus because it's much less work and the automation does so much.
And I recall while you were a pilot, you were also mechanicaling.
Yes.
What, in the barn at home?
Yeah, the 7 days a week for 9 years. Because aviation is incredibly cyclical and you could lose your job at any time. So I had a family and there was no way that I was going to let them down. So I just worked.
You flew for US Air, right?
I flew for US Air. And then that became American. Back to labor rate.
Yeah. You talked about the 80-20 rule in your article. And it was the article from just June of 25. So it's not that old.
Right.
Vilfredo Pareto.
I bet he ate at Arthur Avenue.
It's the Vilfredo principle. And I'm not sure we think enough about that in all the tasks that we do.
You got to figure what percentage is causing me problems, what percentage gives me my greatest yield. You want to maximize your greatest yield and eliminate the bottom 20% that causes you problems.
A lot of the stuff that gets in the way of us running a great company.
Yep.
And sometimes it's our people.
Yeah. Or ourselves most of the time. You trip over your own.
Sure. So live the 80-20 principle. Stop and do that. You talked about a threshold of pain. Let me read a quote from the article. This was defined as the point at which prices are raised until customers say no. I believe that a point for many shops has been or very soon will be reached, but not by their own making. And I have to tell you something. I think that's a poor philosophy. Am I right or wrong? wait for the threshold of pain to say no.
If you are a sales-centric company as opposed to a relationship-based company, then that is a way for you to test what the limits are. Mm-hmm. You just continue to raise the price until such time as you meet sufficient resistance to the price that you know where to back it off. Just one point.
So many coaches, and I've seen so many great presentations on these great spreadsheets. I would like to make this much money on my $1.5 million worth of business. And with all the formulas, my efficiency is all the formulas, it comes up with a labor rate.
Yep.
And if you're not there, because that's your ultimate goal, you can at least start setting goals, steps to get there.
What bothers me about what happens in this, and this is a result of owners that are lazy. You got to understand that for automobile repair shop owners, there's a certain sense of bitterness that is imbued because we look at the trades and we see how much an electrician makes and we see how much a plumber makes and we see what some of the other trades make in proportion to what they have to spend to run their business. A plumber has what? A van and some tools, et cetera. So what does he have in $125,000 in tools, equipment, et cetera? You got guys that have more than that, just in scan tools, right? Their own personal toolbox has got more than that. And yet, when we look at the hierarchy of pay, technicians are on the bottom and shop owners are on the bottom. So what they do is raise your rates. 2025, raise your rates. Raise your rates. Make up for inflation. Raise your rates. The problem is, if you ask them, how did you arrive at the labor rate that you are now charging? It was TLAR. That looks about right. They just picked it right out of the air. And well, was it based on anything? Yeah, you know, no, I was, it seemed like a good figure. How do you know it's enough?
But I'm still not making any money. I don't have any cash.
Yeah.
I've been raising rates and I still don't have any money.
And I have a balance sheet. What's a balance sheet?
Oh, geez.
You know, I don't understand this. According to my P&L, it says I'm making money. Where's my money?
I know. Where's my cash?
It's not in my bank.
Where's my cash?
Well, I don't know. You got $8,000 worth of cores that you haven't returned in the last 3 months. Where do you think that is?
Don't get me started. I'm going to tell you my opinion.
Yeah.
If you're a shop owner and you don't have an agreement with every one of your suppliers, and here's your philosophy. You're going to participate my credit assurance program. That every new part that's on this shelf will be picked up within 2 days by your driver. He needs to come in and look. And the cores, if your driver doesn't consider the part he dropped off earlier in the day and the next, are you sending them for my stuff? Is the salesman looking? I don't care how you figure it out, but I won't have a core here that's any older than 3 days. It's called credit assurance. And you better damn well make sure I have no outstanding goods in my bill. Anyway, I'm not ranting, but I'm soapboxing. But it's not hard to sit down with a supplier and say, here's my new policy on credits. Assure me that I'm going to get my credits. Shame on the owner that looks at the pile, $1,000 worth of core sitting there. That's where his money is.
Yeah. And what about $30,000 worth of inventory?
Oh, please. The software out there. This is an example. I got to stock brakes and rotors because, you know, I want to really be able to rock and I don't really want to wait for my supplier to. Okay, great. Do me a favor. You're my number one supplier. I buy my brakes and rotors from you. Would you run me a list that says I'm going to turn? I'll stock things that will turn 4 times a year. Take all the ones out, put all the ones in. And every 6 months, I want you to run it and I want you to balance my inventory. Hello? God, that was hard.
What's hard is that you're not going to find the salesman who's going to be with the same company 4 times a year.
Oh, please don't do that to me.
I'm telling you this, you know, how many years I was in business? 26 years.
How right? many did you have?
Okay, at least 10.
Oh, geez, all right.
And these were nice guys, one and all. But then what happened is my primary supplier changed the pay structures, trying to become more competitive. You know, so you had guys that were in and retired. Okay, everybody deserved to retire. And then their pay structures. Well, when the guys are retired, the people that were good at being the inside sales, they got promoted. Well, if they got promoted, what happened to the guy that they brought in?
Oh, God. I know. Don't get me started. I can go on this forever. Maybe we should come back and talk about that.
You can anytime you want.
Supplier relationship.
Make sure we can get catered by Arthur Adams.
Oh, my God.
I'm willing to pay. Are you kidding me? I'm willing to pay. I'll pay the freight.
Tracy, St. Anne, my wife, you, your wife,
yes.
G, Doreen. Number one, what a podcast episode we'd get out of that thing, right? got to stop in and interview everybody. Which, Emma, so nice that you see. Come into my shop.
The thing is that marrying Louise was the best thing I've ever done in my life. But the woman does the worst Italian accent I've ever heard in my entire life. And I can't introduce her because if she decides she wants to have some fun, she'll try to do her Italian accent. And it's murder. It's like chalk on a blackboard.
Is she really Italian?
No.
Oh.
Not at all. She spent time in Italy. She spoke Italian. But she has the single worst Italian accent of any human being on the face of the planet.
Well, then give her a week in Arthur Avenue.
I might send her back to the old area. I love my wife. You know, I'm like, honey, don't listen to this. I mean nothing bad by it. And I told her, you know, don't sing and don't do accents.
Well, I am sure we have not tackled every problem that exists in our great industry, but we did prompt some cool thoughts.
Yeah.
Dutch, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I sincerely appreciate it.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive repair business podcast, Remarkable Results Radio. Get your episodic education on the ARPN listening app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com. Also, enjoy the podcast on our Carm Capriotto YouTube channel. Carm is all for advancing the professional automotive service industry. Until next time.